time to let compassion come front and center. While documentary filmmaker Fritzi Horstmann was releasing many of her own traumas, she was led into the collective. A project led her into the prison system, where the Compassion Prison Project was born. We just rolled right into conversation, so join us. This is Robin with Tributaries.
Just a little sad. I found out that one of the men I've been corresponding with on death row had been executed.
Oh, my word.
And yeah, it's just a little, it's very painful to see what we do to our fellow brothers and sisters.
That's for sure. And yet, hopefully you can see that other side where you were able to meet, and I'm sure he was lightened.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I did or what was done, but hope so. It just feels like one less light is in the world, you know?
Right. Before we talk about the Compassion Prison Project, I'd like to ask you about your personal journey which led you to this project. What did you start realizing about your own life that ended up enveloping everyone?
Well, I was having coffee with my good friend, and I had told him that I was abused when I was a child, and he suggested I read a book called The Body Keeps the Score, and diving into that book and reading every page and every bit about what trauma does to the brain, body, and spirit, it was a big wake-up epiphany call for me. And I saw my life and I saw the lives of others from a different lens. It explained why my parents were such heavy smokers. It explained why my father drank. It explained why people watch Netflix for hundreds of hours. It's just the need to numb and the need to distract yourself from the pain of the body and the trauma. Then I walked into a prison. I was invited to an event called Hustle 2.0, where people come in, visit a maximum security prison, and teach men about being entrepreneurs. When I walked in there, I was greeted by 100 magnificent, beautiful men, and my expectations were completely dashed. It's a stressful world, but it's not somber. It's just filled with light and possibility. I talked to these men, and story after story were stories of trauma, deep, unimaginable trauma. One of the men, his name was Deshaun, his father tried to drown him when he was 10 years old, and stories of foster care abuse and being raped. What happens when these events happen in our lives is we lose contact with our real nature. So when I was introducing myself after I'd heard a couple of these stories, just from this weird icebreaker we went through, I said, this isn't a prison, this is a trauma center. And from that moment on, I was reading my journal the other day. I was like, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life is go to prisons. I didn't even know, but that's what happened.
Yeah, it's so beautiful in Portugal. That is one country that has no drug laws anymore, and they treat addiction not like someone is a criminal, but it's like they are in a trauma. They have an addiction and they need help. So let's find a way to help instead of criticize or judge or just lock down and forget about them or forget that piece of our society exists.
Yes, and what the other piece is criminalizing us for our own trauma. That's what we're doing everywhere we look. We're criminalized for having suffered. And America doesn't want to see that, doesn't want to look at that. We want to look good to the world. Well, guess what? We're the most traumatized nation in the world.
Well, I certainly align with Dr. Robert Black, who you quote on your website as saying, adverse childhood experiences are the single greatest unaddressed public health threat facing our nation today. And since there is no manual on parenting, we all get thrown into experiences that negatively affect us all on all kinds of levels. So I'm wondering, how have you come to define trauma?
I would say it's the annihilation of the spirit. It is seeing a person as an other instead of as someone who belongs to the world, who belongs to us. It's the dehumanizing. If you can beat someone up or if you can sexually abuse somebody, you're not seeing that person as part of you, as a vital piece of the puzzle for you. You're seeing that person as someone who can be othered, who can be destroyed, basically. But usually the person perpetrating these acts are people who have been destroyed already. It's a cycle. It's something that we need to interrupt now, because these patterns have created all the disease. Like you mentioned, Robert Bloch's quote, all of the diseases, all that's happening with COVID, asthma, autoimmune diseases, suicidal ideation, depression, heart attacks, lung cancer, all the cancers, those all can be attributed to childhood trauma or unaddressed trauma, not just childhood trauma, but acts of violation of the spirit, body, and soul.
Yes, and I think we can certainly take it another step and get in there on a spiritual level as well. Where does it begin? And it's that separation from self, which is separation from the whole.
And yes.
It's time. It's time to bring all that back.
Yes, and this separation is also generational. I've been in a workshop with Gabor Mate, who's incredible, and yes, one of the things he cited was the idea of resilience, and also the idea that these betrayals on many levels, like let's say a father is doing the active abuse, when the mother doesn't support the child, it's reinforced. And in that is also a whole other level of shame. And the shame is one of the things that's actually keeping the societal dysfunction in place. It's the shame that's keeping our personal traumas in place, but also our national and global traumas in place. You know, what we're doing to the forest, to the Amazon rainforest, is a trauma. It's a trauma to us all. Somebody's got to do something. Somebody's got to heal those men that are out there destroying basically the lungs of this planet. You know, it's those things I see in a bigger picture, but I'm really focused on prison.
Right. And it's beautiful that you are, because someone else is focusing on the rainforest, and that's what it's taking. We can't just say, okay, I want to save the world. Well, what piece are you going to go after? We have to go to work. We have to roll up our sleeves and do something and actively make a difference, which, thank you. I can see you're definitely doing that. And Fritzi, maybe you can tell us about Step Inside the Circle. Tell us what that's about and include ACE in the telling.
Yes, Step Inside the Circle is an exercise I do in my program at Compassion Prison Project. I've been working with men mostly, but also I've worked with some women. And you form a circle, and for each adverse childhood experience that you've experienced, you take one step inside the circle. And there are 10 ACEs. There was an ACE quiz created in 1998 by Dr. Vince Folletti and Dr. Robert Anda from Kaiser and CDC. They found out that child abuse was prevalent in their test. It was 70% were middle-class white people. And they believe that 60% of Americans have had at least one adverse childhood experience. But I believe that it's probably closer to 80 to 90% of Americans have had at least one adverse childhood experience. And those experiences include domestic violence, physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, physical and emotional neglect, a parent addicted or an alcoholic, a parent or a caregiver that is mentally ill, a parent or caregiver that has gone to prison. These experiences are so devastating. Even just one can change the gray matter in your brain and the development of your brain. I have 7 ACEs. So in this circle in the prison, I wanted to find something physical so we could really see physically the extent of child abuse in our prison system. So I would say if a parent or other adult in the household often or very often would swear at you, insult you, put you down, humiliate you, or act in a way that made you afraid that you might be physically hurt, take a step inside the circle. In the short film that I created, which is part of a larger film we'll be making after COVID subsides, we see 235 men in a circle take steps towards the center for each adverse childhood experience that they've endured. As you see, most of those men head toward the center of the circle. In one prison, out of 204 men, 70% had 4 or more ACEs, when the national average is 12.5. In another prison, 79% of the men experienced 4 or more ACEs. And with four or more ACEs, you're 7 times more likely to go to prison. There are so many 10s, 9s, 8s, and 7s on these tests, and it's really quite alarming to think of the levels of abuse these men and women have endured in their childhood. I haven't done enough research, but women have even more ACEs than the men. And in the small circle that I did, it was 5 to 10. Nobody had less than 5 ACEs in that circle of the women I worked with. That's what we're really looking at in our society. We're throwing people that are traumatized away, our homeless, our vets. And our vets have childhood trauma, too. That's actually what we're finding, is that PTSD is really from their childhood trauma. And it's just exacerbated by the unbearable conditions of war and abuse that they're made to endure.
I'm not pulling up the study, but I was having this conversation with someone one time, and they were talking about how someone was in a war situation and they had something happen to them. And from all of the stories they had heard, they really got to a point where they felt like it wasn't even a coincidence or a mistake. This person ended up in a situation that just cemented even more a trauma.
More violence.
Right.
The normalization of violence is actually what we're also talking about. One of the men in my class, he wrote, "I thought violence was normal. I thought that's what we did." He would watch his mother get abused. "You thought that's how you treated a woman." So, you know, this is re-educating the public, but it's also re-educating our brains and our nervous system. Because when we're hyper-vigilant towards violence, our reactions are going to be violent. That's what I noticed with myself. My reactions to really even small triggers were overblown, and I didn't even understand why I would behave this way. You know, road rage, I would just get so mad just when somebody would cut me off. But that's because my internal organism is telling me, you're not safe. You need to either fight or flight. And I always chose fight. That's what I was taught when I was growing up. If I was going to survive, I had to fight. That was the dynamic in my family. So we see evidence of trauma every day in our daily life. Someone getting angry at a clerk. This poor clerk didn't do anything, but they didn't respond in the way the person expected, and then this person blows up. All the smokers out there, there's trauma there. I used to be really mad at smokers. I grew up with smokers, and they were kind of polluting my air, but now I have this compassion for them because I know underneath this habit is just a world of real pain and real unaddressed trauma. I'm so relieved I don't have to be angry at them anymore.
Yes,
you know?
That is it in a nutshell, isn't it? Because once you can truly come to that place of compassion, it's such a weight off of our own shoulders. When we can stop blaming, once we let go of that, boy, it just allows for so much and things lighten up. Now, you've shared some great things about your own experiences and how you've been able to see and make some shifts. And what's it been like for people you've been working with in prisons? I don't know if the shame and blame are the two main things to get over in order to enter that place of compassion or not, but how have you seen some changes there?
Well, the three big examples, two of the men that were addicted while they were in class, I would see them and they would be addicted to heroin. They're both clean. So something has clicked in them that their own self-hatred has lightened and maybe is dissolving. I can't really speak for them, but to me that's just evidence of a real self-love blossoming. And the other one, which, you know, I cry just thinking about it, is a man had a DNR, a do not resuscitate, in his file. And he went to his file and he said, "I want to revoke that. I want to live. I want you to resuscitate me." Other men report having better relationships with their family and being able to communicate in ways they never had. Instead of harboring this resentment, they see the traumas that their parents had. They're not living with that burden of all that hate that they would carry around with them every day.
Boy, it's just so compelling and an emotional piece in such a positive manner. It seems so seamless and so kind of miraculous what happened. And I'm wondering if there were people that were really mad still about you even trying to do something like that.
A few people have taken offense at me saying that I see myself in the men, and I don't really know why, because I really just see my traumas and their traumas. But a couple of other women said, you know, I'm a white woman and I got a get out of jail free card. And they think, well, I'm white and I didn't. So I can't speak for everyone. I'm just being as honest as I can from my own experience. And I'm not really saying that everyone gets a get out of jail free card because they're white or whatever it is. But I apologize if I have offended anyone. My intention is only to share my trauma and the trauma of these men who want to share it as well.
Of course, yes. And I really congratulate you for this project, getting it off the ground. But to get your project into the prison and have permission to film it as well, what was that like? That's a miracle in itself, isn't it?
Oh, you have no idea. The first iteration was going to be at Kern Valley State Prison, where I work with the 30 men for the past year, but they would only allow 4 crew members in. And then, I don't know what angel decided to land me at Lancaster at the beginning of 2020. I walked in there, and that same day that I walked in there, I spoke to the warden. I said, I want to do a trauma circle with 250 guys. And he says, okay, we can make that happen. And then Rodrigo Prieto, who is Martin Scorsese's cinematographer, said he was available on February 12th. And so I don't know how I pulled it off, but somehow 23 crew members walked into that prison and we filmed for 5 hours. Of course, I thought we were going to film for 10 hours based on schlepping all that equipment. And it took 2 hours just to check every piece of equipment into that prison. I mean, every screw, every Allen wrench was cataloged. So it was a huge ordeal. We got magic on that day. And I'm just so grateful for our incredible crew and those incredible men. It's just a miracle.
Right. What do you see for the entire project that is hinted at in the PSA?
Well, we filmed a circle with the men. I would like to film a circle with women. I'd like to film a circle with incarcerated vets and maybe also with vets that aren't incarcerated together. I'd like to do a circle with staff members and correctional officers. And actually, because of this video that's gone out, one institution has contacted me to work with their correctional officers on Zoom. I did one woman circle on a Zoom call. That's the model that I'm working on right now, just trying to get a curriculum set for Zoom calls, for a Zoom situation until COVID subsides. But I really believe it's going to probably be 1 to 2 years before we'll be allowed back in. So I really want to cover as much ground and be in as many prisons by the end of this year as I can. And just another great thing, Minnesota Parole Board is having me talk to them and showing this film at their luncheon next month. And they want me to talk about trauma-informed care and about what trauma does to the brain, body, and spirit. It's very exciting. There's little pockets of openings and possibility all throughout the United States. I want this to be a tsunami of trauma-informed care. Let's shift this dynamic and not to let unions have a stranglehold on the way prisons are operated. If we can bring trauma-informed care to all prisons, our streets will be safer because the men and women that come back to us will have worked on their trauma. They will be aware of their triggers. And they won't be so susceptible to alcohol and drug addiction and to violating the members they love the most.
Right. And also, what about just reaching out to our county commissioners and have this program move through the police departments?
Absolutely. How amazing would that be? But also through communities. Our communities are all traumatized. 60% of Americans are traumatized, according to the CDC or whoever it's according to. Let's start working on our trauma together. We're doing circles with communities as well as prisons.
Right. And I didn't mean to pick out the police department because certainly I have no complaints about our police department, but just thinking that they're the ones who oftentimes are on the front line of having to work with criminals or people that do end up in prison.
That's beautiful. Plus, they are also traumatized, you know, experiencing or seeing a dead body, seeing your coworker shot. Those are all traumatic events, and those affect your nervous system. Those create flight or fight. Your amygdala takes over. Your prefrontal cortex goes away. The front of your brain is what I would call the moral center. So when people say this convicted man has a moral failing, his brain was not working, which brings me to why are we executing men and women? We say they're morally corrupt, but they weren't in their right mind. They weren't in their mind.
It's so true, and it's so obvious. If you ask me, the head of Monsanto needs to go through and step into the circle, anyone that's poisoning the earth.
What you're describing is we're dissociated. We don't get the connection. See, that's why I have no shame, because people working at Monsanto have been trained. All they know is that if they make money, they're doing good. They're doing what they're supposed to do. If you do good, you get rewarded. If you do bad, you get punished. But in that, it denies the humanity and the spirituality of our being. So, yes, we can demonize everybody who opposes our views, but the real facts are there is no demons. There's just a system that doesn't work anymore and doesn't work for us. And when we start getting into real communion with what our real needs are, which is water we can drink and families that are taken care of, and all families, you know, all of us are being taken care of, that's called wholeness. I truly believe the head of Monsanto wants wholeness as well. I truly believe he wants clean drinking water, but he's in a paradigm that doesn't reward that. And actually, we shouldn't be rewarding clean drinking water. We should just be knowing that that's necessary. That's all. It's just a shift.
Absolutely, yes. In all of this, there is no, for me, I can only speak for me here, but I don't see good and bad anymore. There's very little truth in the world. And when it comes to human behavior, it's a totally gray area. So when we can see the compassion, that's the cleanup truck coming through.
I like that. I like that, because the Compassion Prison Project. So we can just say the Cleanup Prison Project. I love that.
Yeah, it will work really, in reverse, because you're cleaning up the prison, but it's going to work back into the entire society in the world, right?
Absolutely. I chose prison. I mean, I could choose inner city streets, but that's a harder way to access. I don't know how to access that yet, but I hope to figure that out. I hope that becomes part of the work we do.
Right.
But I just wanted to suggest, if you look online on YouTube, type Marshall Rosenberg, nonviolent communication. It's an incredible way to really get yourself introduced to how wonderful it is just being alive. And that's enough. We don't need all this reward system. We don't need these big houses. We don't need all that. What we really need is harmony in our society. And I do recommend Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg, either the book or his videos or his podcast.
Yes. And, you know, you say, well, I don't know where to go for that. Well, you are already doing that, because you're going into the prisons. The prisoners, some of them are going to go back to where they came from. And so it's already working. It's all already working. And unfortunately, sometimes it feels like, and it is like trying to turn a huge ship around in the ocean. You just can't take a quick left turn, right? You have to go, whoa,
oh my gosh,
around.
Yeah. You use the metaphor. This is the metaphor that California Department of Corrections is using.
Oh, really?
And it's also the same metaphor if you watch the trials of Gabriel Fernandez, the young little 8-year-old who was abused to death by his family. The Department of Social Services also says that. So I don't want this to be a huge shift. I don't want to plant that seed.
You know, I get you. I agree with you. Takes a little while, but then once the momentum is happening, yeah, I wouldn't even use a future tense with, well, I don't know how to get there, because you're there.
I hear you.
The work is being
done.
You.
And one of the great things that happened last week was one of the men I'm working with in prison, his dream has been to create a STEM class in his neighborhood. Mm. And he reached out to his friend, who reached out to me, and suddenly we're finding a STEM class for these 20 underserved youth in his neighborhood.
Beautiful.
Exactly. And that's the Giving Back Project that we've started, which is the idea is a harm's been committed. We can't fix the past, but we can create and give back to our communities that we've harmed.
Right.
And so there's a few examples on the website, CompassionPrisonProject.org, and the website has more examples of the Giving Back Project, and soon there's going to be a lot more prison systems that we are going to be partnering with so that we can really, really bring trauma-informed care. And our mission in the next 3 years is all prisons become healing centers in the United States. So hold that vision, all you who are listening. Imagine when someone commits a crime, we realize something is wrong. It's not something wrong with them, but something terrible has happened to them. And we need to help them repair their spirits and their bodies and their brains,
right?
Specifically their brains.
Yeah. Fritzi, I just want to ask you, are you familiar with Dr. Hugh Len?
I've heard of Dr. Hugh Len. Ho'oponopono.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. And his whole story about the most criminally insane people were on this certain ward in a prison in Hawaii, and he didn't even go in there, but he's so connected to forgiveness that the whole entire ward was healed.
Well, the part three of our series that the men did Ho'oponopono.
Oh, cool.
I knew that name.
Yeah.
They did it on the yard. So, yes, we did Ho'oponopono on the yard.
I did an interview with him years ago now about it, and he was so humble. A couple of things happened in that interview. It was over the phone like this, and he was so humble, and I kept trying to get him to tell that story, right? And he was so humble, he wouldn't even touch it. And he ended up saying something like, "Oh, I'm just an old guy I got a sore elbow." And I was cracking up. I was going, "Well, what am I doing interviewing some old guy with a sore elbow?" And I'm saying this to him because we were just on such a different level. You know, it was just hysterical. But honestly, after that interview, which was just on the phone, I went to my acupuncturist the next morning, and I felt very high after talking with him, you know. So he definitely had a grace. He was floating in grace for sure. And my acupuncturist the next day said, "What is going on? All of your pulses are totally in sync." And, I just love him. He's just such a beautiful man. But anyway, I'm glad you know about him because of that. He's just a beautiful sight in the world of light. Yeah.
Truly. And one of the things we're doing is working on creating a healing toolbox for the men and women in prison so that they can start, since we can't go into prisons, I want to bring them some healing modalities, meditation.
Well, I knew this was going to be great, Fritzi, and we will do our share to put this up.
Oh, wonderful. It's really great talking with you. It's like you had a powerful force. You kind of made me sit in and really dive deep. So it was really, really beautiful interview. Thank you.
All right. I hope I stand permanently corrected. I am no longer using that ship turning in the ocean analogy. Many thanks to Fritzi Hortzman for any guest information. To listen to archives, share resources, or sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Podcasts are on iTunes and hopefully all of your favorite social podcast media sites. If not, please let us know and we'll take care of it. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.